From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
He's pulling away by three. Jorge Chavez and Monarcos have won the Kentucky Derby. And the final time was 1:59.45. He was as fast as Secretariat.
Arrowgate, full out. Can he stick with him? California Chrome. Arrowgate still coming. California Chrome.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
It's Ali Dar and Affirm battling back along the inside. We'll test these two to the wire. Affirmed under a left-hand whip. Ali Dar on the outside driving. Affirmed and Ali Dar heads apart. Affirm's got a nose in front as they come onto the wire.
The Derby winner, Barnett Bird, closing a late gap, but it is Rachel Alexandra. She's simply above and beyond them. A filly has won the Preakness.
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Good morning once again, everyone, and welcome to the show that launched this network, the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, coming to you once again from our studios right here in the heart of the Bluegrass, Lexington, Kentucky. And a special welcome to all of you tuned in across North America on Sirius 219, XM 201, on our affiliates in Lexington, Louisville, and across the country, and everyone joining us digitally through our website at horseracingradio.net. Happy to have you along for the ride for the next couple of hours. And sitting here on the first Saturday in March, we are finally starting to see various signs of spring. Daylight savings time begins tomorrow. Don't forget about that. When you go to bed tomorrow night, turn your clocks ahead 1 hour. That's good because we'll start to see a little more daylight in the afternoon, which is always a positive sign. The other positive sign is that we are now just 56 days, 9 hours, 47 minutes, and 56 seconds away from the Run for the Roses, Saturday, May 2nd at Churchill Downs. And today's racing docket across the country is a big one if you're talking about the Derby picture. It's a big one if you're talking about several divisions because there are several big races. But at this time of the year, we tend to place a lot of emphasis, and I think rightfully so, on the horses making their way down the road to the Kentucky Derby. Let me start with congratulating the connections of Maximum Security, who went to Saudi Arabia last week and took down the world's richest horse race, $20 million purse. Maximum Security, a horse that was disqualified, some people thought controversially, disqualified from a victory in the Kentucky Derby last year, goes all the way to Saudi Arabia. And I don't know if you'll call it redemption, but it was certainly a special moment for his trainer, Jason Service, for all the connections, for Coolmore, who, of course, campaigned him in their silks, or did for the Saudi Cup, and for jockey Luis Saez. What a moment it was. And congratulations. Congratulations to Midnight Bisou. Our good friend, our colleague here on the network, Jeff Bloom and Bloom Racing, the owners of Midnight Bisou, Steve Aspison, what a great training job he did to get her ready to fire off a layoff. I thought at one point in the final 16th of a mile, I thought she was going to catch Maximum Security. But what a race she ran. The filly against the boys, and she comes in second to a really good horse. And I think you have to say now, Maximum Security, the champion three-year-old from last year, now undoubtedly the leader in this older horse division, and that is welcome news because we need a star in that older horse division. A horse that just goes out there every time and takes care of business, and that's what Maximum Security has done his entire career. So congrats to them. Really, really good stuff. I enjoyed watching that performance last week. Three Derby points races today. You have the Tampa Bay Derby, the Gotham, and the San Felipe. Of course, the Tampa Bay Derby at Tampa Bay Downs, the Gotham at Aqueduct, the San Felipe out in California at Santa Anita. I don't know which one is the strong. I have to say it's probably the Tampa Bay Derby or the San Felipe, which means that the Derby winner probably comes from the Gotham, now that I said that. But the Tampa Bay Derby, Sole Volante, the son of Gainsway Stallion Caraconti, the 2-1 morning line favorite, ultra impressive and storming home from off the pace to win the Sam F. Davis last time out. Then you have Todd Pletcher in there, who has owned the Tampa Bay Derby, a record 5 victories in the race for Todd. He'll have 3 chances to add to that record later today. You have Saffy Joseph Jr., the native of Barbados, who sends out Chance It, second choice on the morning line, the only Florida bred running in the Tampa Bay Derby. I'm going to talk with Saffy coming up at 8:35 Eastern. This is also, by the way, for those of you who have listened the past several years and hear us talk about Barbados all year long, this is the big day in Barbados, Barbados Gold Cup Day. So I'll get a chance to talk to Saffy about racing in Barbados. We'll talk a little bit about the Gold Cup and what that means to that tiny island. And we'll get a chance to talk about the Tampa Bay Derby. Again, 8:35 Eastern. You're going to hear from Todd Pletcher as well. Got about a 12-minute interview with Todd that he did yesterday with Anthony on Red Brand Radio. That's coming your way at 9:23 Eastern time. And some interesting things from Todd. He talks about not just his 3 horses in the Tampa Bay Derby, but he also talks about how he preps a horse differently now than he did when he first won the Tampa Bay Derby almost 20 years ago with Limehouse. He talks about his philosophy and his approach to getting a horse ready for not just the Tampa Bay Derby, but all the prep races leading up to the first Saturday in May. Some interesting comments from Todd coming up at 9:23, so stay tuned for that. The Gotham and New York 11 horses, Mischievous Alex, the son of Spendthrift Stallion Into Mischief, 3-1 morning line favorite there. John Service, Kendrick Carmouche are your team. The San Felipe, as you might expect, may be all about Bob Baffert. He'll have 2 entrants in this year's San Felipe. He's won that race a record 6 times. He'll look to add to that record. John Shiras, sending out Honor AP, ultra talented. We'll see if he's up to the task later today. Then you have Champion Storm the Court. This is probably, even though not the biggest field of the 3 Derby preps, as a matter of fact, it's the smallest, but probably the strongest of the 3, at least on paper. But that Tampa Bay Derby's solid too. And who knows? As I said, I say Tampa Bay Derby, I say the San Felipe. Good chance the winner comes from the Gotham now, because I just put the jinx on the... I just put that horse right in the winner's circle, the winner of the Gotham probably. No jockey in history has won the San Felipe more than Hall of Famer Chris McCarron. He's won it a record 7 times, and I'm going to have the privilege of visiting with Chris this morning in studio at 9:40, the final segment of the show. He'll talk about not just the San Felipe, but the Big Cap. It's Big Cap Day at Santa Anita. The Santa Anita Handicap. Chris won that race 3 times. Won it for the first time with Ali Sheba, who defeated Ferdinand in a great stretch battle. Going to have the replay of that race, at least the stretch call, coming up later in the show, too. But Chris coming up 9:40 Eastern. Other big news coming out this week involved a couple of veteran trainers who called it quits. Kieran McLaughlin, I think, maybe the... I don't know. I guess they're both surprising. But Kieran did it first. So it took everybody back when Kieran said, hey, that's it. I'm done. I'm stepping away from the game. From training. From the training game. Not from the sport of horse racing. He was very clear about that. He's going to pick up the book, be a jocks agent for Luis Saez. And as he alluded to throughout the week, maybe he made that decision 1 week late. Could have started last week and had a big payday with the Saudi Cup, but he'll take over his book and he'll step away from training. Gary Contessa did the same thing. Right after Kieran's news came out, Gary said, that's it, I'm done. Take a look at their resumes. Kieran saddled nearly 1,600 winners, 1,577 to date. Now, he still has horses in his name for another day or two. 1,577 winners. He won the Belmont with Jazzle. That was his lone classic win. Saddled 3 Breeders' Cup winners as well. Gary Contessa, he didn't have success in the classic races in the Breeders' Cup the way Kieran did, but he saddled 2,364 winners. More than $84 million in purses. And both of them walking away from their training careers this week. I'm going to visit with Gary Contessa at 9 o'clock Eastern time this morning. We'll talk more about that story. You'll hear a soundbite from Kieran as well, talking about his new role as a jocks agent with Luis Saez. Our Stallion Spotlight segment kicks off the program at 8:15. That's about 5 minutes from now. I'll be joined by Jared Burdine, who is the general manager at Hillandale, and we'll take a look at their Stallion roster for 2020. You have your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris, and our Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment with Bobby Newman comes up as well, and that's all presented by our friends at Spendthrift. Don't forget, Breeders' Cup tickets go on sale on Monday. We're talking about the countdown to the Kentucky Derby. We're only 244 days away from the Breeders' Cup here at Keeneland in Lexington, November 6th and 7th, and Breeders' Cup tickets going on sale Monday. All right, poll question for this morning. I was thinking about this over the past couple of days. I wanted to come up with a different question to throw out there as opposed to just yes, no, multiple choice. So here's what we're going to do, and this might take a little more effort, so maybe we don't get quite as many responses, but I'm okay with that. I think this will be fun. I was thinking about Kieran and Gary, and in particular Kieran, because I've gotten to know Kieran just a bit better than I've gotten to know Gary over the years in doing these shows. Kieran, when you think about his love for horse racing, that love, it's been a remarkable story, and it will continue to be as he moves on with the second chapter, if you will, or another chapter of his career. So I got thinking about that, and we all have a story. One of the questions I love to ask trainers and jockeys when they come on the program, because the answers are always so diverse, is where did that love of horse racing begin for you? Where did it begin for Kieran? Where did it begin for Gary? We all have a story. All of us who are fans of the sport or working in the sport, we all have a story. So that's my question today. Go to @HRN on Twitter. The question is, where did your love of horse racing begin? And when Chauncey posts that question for us this morning, use #ForLoveOfTheGame. And respond to us at HRN on Twitter. You don't have a Twitter account? You can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. Let me know, where did your love of horse racing begin? And I'll try to read those as we move throughout the program if I get a couple of minutes here. I would love to hear your story. I get to hear it from the people that are involved in the sport, but now I want to hear it from our listeners. Where did your love of horse racing begin? At HRN on Twitter, #ForLoveOfTheGame. Or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. You can also go to our Facebook page, Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, and post your response there. All right, going to get to a break. When I come back, we'll kick it off with our Stallion Spotlight presented by Red Brand Fence. Jared Burdine from Hillandale is in the on-deck circle. This is the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Eric Hamelback, CEO of the National HBPA. Thoroughbred owners and trainers know the importance of keeping their horse on schedule, on the track, and injury-free. Even a small injury can result in losing precious time and serious money. That's why farms worldwide trust Keep Safe V-Mesh Fence from Red Brand. The strong mesh design flexes on impact and reduces injuries, keeping your athletes on schedule and on the track. Learn more about Keep Safe V-Mesh Horse Fence at redbrand.com.
Multiple Grade 1 winning millionaire, World of Trouble.
World of Trouble and Manny Franco win the Jiper.
World of Trouble takes the Carter.
One of the fastest horses of his generation, the son of Cantharos captured both the Grade 1 Carter on dirt and Grade 1 Jiper on turf this year, and would go on to record 100-plus buyer speed figures in his last seven starts, including a 118 buyer as a three-year-old, the highest three-year-old buyer speed figure of 2018. World of Trouble, standing at Hillandale.
Bloom Racing. Started by former jockey and 35-year racing industry veteran Jeffrey Bloom, Bloom Racing offers racing partnerships, bloodstock services, pinhooking, and private race management.
Pulling away from Come Dancing, Mopetism, and the others, Midnight Bizou leaves no doubt today. She won the Phipps in hand.
Experience the fun, excitement, and exclusive access of racehorse ownership with Bloom Racing. Forming racing partnerships now, get in on the action at bloomracing.com.
The National HBPA is a coalition of over 30 individual affiliates in the United States and Canada, comprised of thousands of thoroughbred owners, trainers, and breeders, committed to the positive future of thoroughbred racing while working to increase its popularity and uphold the highest standards of welfare and integrity. Stop by to visit CEO Eric Hamelback at the National HBPA headquarters in Lexington, Kentucky, and see what the HBPA is doing for you.
Unanimous champion two-year-old and three-time Grade 1 winner Classic Empire got off to a fantastic start with his first weanlings at the November sales. Averaging over $100,000 from 27 sold, up to eight times his initial $35,000 stud fee. Bred on the same cross as champion freshman sire American Pharoah, Classic Empire's outstanding race record is backed up with a stallion's pedigree. Being from the family of Harlan's Holiday, ride the rails in Bold Nijin. Standing for just $20,000, Classic Empire looks like a serious value for 2020.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FDBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Tenda Equine and Pet Care products have been keeping world-class equine athletes happy and healthy for generations. Keep your equine athlete looking and performing well with Tenda Next Generation Wound and Skin Care Treatment. Along with nutritional supplements, leg and muscle care products, salves, hoof care, poultice, topical aids, and grooming products. Visit TendaHorse.com today.
Eddie Woods is the perennial leading consigner, having sold multiple greatest stakes winners, including 26 Grade 1 winners and four champions.
Big Brown bombing home!
Midnight Luke could not have been more impressive!
This is a scintillating performance from Lady Eli.
And look at this guy go. Instagram.
Galilean, who will put on another impressive display.
A passion for hard work that produces big time results. Find your next winner at the Eddie Woods Consignment. Visit eddiewoods.com.
Hello, I'm Junior Alvarado, and I listen to HRRN.
This is the Stallion Spotlight, presented by Red Brand Fence.
What a memorable Breeders' Cup Classic. It's a race for the ages. Bayern, Toast of New York, California Chrome. Bayern, Toast of New York. Bayern has won it.
Good Magic's going to win his first race, and he's going to do it in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Curl on the outside. Curl is courageous. Straight and trying to hold. Final finish. It could go to Curlin. Curlin, I think, got a Bayern nose.
And what a magnificent back-to-back winner of the sprint. Midnight Luke could not have been more impressive. He wins with his ears pricked in the end.
Flincher got through on the inside, and there he goes. As Money Multiplier moves up on the outside into second, Twilight Eclipse is third, as Flincher just strides away. Oh, what a racehorse.
Oh, what a racehorse, and oh, what a stallion roster at Hillendale. Each of those stallions that you just heard, part of that roster for 2020, rock solid. And I have the privilege of being joined now on our Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence by Jared Burdine, who is the general manager at Hillendale. Jared, good morning and welcome, my friend. Appreciate the time.
Morning. How are you guys doing?
I'm pumped up now. I heard some of those calls. I heard, you know, Curlin and Flincher and Good Magic. Look, I mean, you go to work out there every day. You just have to pinch yourself, man, when you look at that stallion roster.
It's pretty impressive. Get a little something for everybody, and it's all quality from top to bottom. We believe in each and every one of them. I think Midnight Lute's the leading sire in America right now. After Midnight Bassoos gets his second last week, and Curlin's in the top 10. Kitten's Joy is in the top 15, I think. And Violence is not far behind. And I think Kitten's Joy is leading sire by winners so far. He's back at it again. Kitten's Joy is he's pretty amazing, and I think he's underestimated how important of a sire internationally and in America he's been for the past decade. He's been the leading active turf sire in America for the past 7 years. And his progeny is average earnings per year of average like 12 $12.8 million each year.
Yeah.
He's been pretty impressive and dominant in America for the past decade.
Yeah, he certainly has. A horse that started his career with his owner, Ken Ramsey, and then, of course, at Ken Ramsey's farm and now standing at Hillendale. And, you know, Ken used to come on the show with me all the time when he was standing there, and he would just go on and on and on about the fact that this is a horse that did it on his own. You know, he made his own name. So when we hear a stallion makes his own name or does it on his own, what does that mean, Jared?
I think they did. They just produced it. He didn't get a whole lot of respect in the breeding shed there, and give Ken credit. You know, he claimed mares, bought mares. You know, he did this, bred him to his own stallion there, and Kitten's Joy did the rest for him. You know.
Yeah, no
doubt. I
think
that's what he means by did it on his own. Kitten's Joy improved those mares
no question about it. No question about it. He is ultra tough, Kitten's Joy. You mentioned Midnight Loop and the gutsy effort by Midnight Bisou in Saudi Arabia off the layoff, second behind champion Maximum Security. I talked about that at the top of the show. But Midnight Loop is interesting to me because here's a horse that made his name on the racetrack as a champion sprinter. He was so fast. He was so versatile. And now here he is, and he's siring horses that can go short, that can go long. They're versatile in their own right. Tell me a little bit more about Midnight Loop.
Midnight Loot, I mean, he's been a consistent producer of, you know, elite-level talent. He's got mid-court, who's coming off a 3.5-link win and going in the San Diego Handicap today, so hopefully we can add to Midnight Loot's earnings lead. But and then Midnight Lucky, Shaking It Up, Gimme the Loot, Governor Charlie, Tis Midnight, Midnight Hawk. For every year, he seems to come up with a top level performer and been consistent each and every year. And he's such a big, beautiful, balanced horse. He's almost 17 hands, perfectly put together. You don't think he's that big when you're standing in his presence, and you can see how that translates in his offspring.
How about Curlin? How does he just continue to do it year in and year out? He's remarkable.
Yeah, I think a lot of it is, you know, his class. If you see him, he just has that presence about him, and he passes that along to his offspring, and they just have that will to win. And they're big, solid, big boned horses. I know I'm biased, but I don't think there's anybody. If you want to breed a classic winner, there's no better choice than Curlin. You know, you get the Breeders' Cup Classic winner last year. He's got two impressive maiden winners coming back in prep races, and Six Toe in the Gotham, and then the Texas Swing for Pletcher in the Tampa Bay Derby today. But in his first six crops, he had a classic placed or winner in every one. And it looks like he's becoming a sire of sires with Palace Malice as his first son with runners so far, and he's had a Breeders' Cup winner and had another impressive winner at Tampa in that prep race. And so kind of translates into good magic there. So I think Curlin is poised to be a sire of sires as well.
Yeah, again, no question on that. He has just been remarkable. Visiting with Jared Burdine, the general manager at Hillendale, what a job that is. And he has to, as I said, pinch himself every time he goes to work out there and looks at that stallion roster. You know, Byron is another horse that if you're talking about a horse with classic ability and speed and a horse who could carry that speed a classic distance, here's your guy. I mean, Byron has to be the choice, right?
Yeah, his win in the Woody Stevens on Belmont Day that year, I remember I was there in person and coming away from that was an ultra impressive 7 furlongs, and I think he had 10 starts in 11 months and was consistent that 3-year-old year when he won the Breeders' Cup Classic as well. So he wins the Woody Stevens at 7 furlongs and goes and wins the mile and a quarter. And so he's got, from his limited number, he's got like 28 winners, and they're poised to produce and come on and win stakes here. But he's producing runners at good numbers considering how many mares he's bred and opportunities he's gotten.
Yeah, you know, there are certain stallions, Jared, in our sport, stallions like Curlin, like Tappet, for example, that are kind of mainstays at the top of these stallion lists. Well, Medaglia d'Oro is another one that's also had a ton of success, produced unbelievable champions. And you have a son of Medaglia d'Oro in Violence, who you mentioned at the top of the interview, that has really started his stud career in the right way. Tell me a little bit more about him.
Violence, he's had two TDN Rising Stars to start the year, and he's got No Parole, who is going to be on the Derby Trail. I think he's running in the Grade 2 Rebel next.
Mm-hmm.
He's undefeated, done everything right so far. Violence has just consistently produced elite-level runners. And in the end of the year last year, a few of them, you know, had issues here and there that slowed him down a little bit. But any horse that's producing elite-level runners like that, they're going to keep coming. And he's got huge, big crops of well-bred mares coming in behind him. Todd Pletcher, he's starting a maiden in the Tampa Bay Derby this year, too. So I feel like Unrighteous, I think he must feel like it's got some talent as well.
Yeah, he's going to
throws a big, good-looking.
We're going to hear Todd talking about that horse later in the show. You're 100% right. He does feel like that horse has a lot of talent, and it's a big step. It's a shot, if you will. But he certainly does appear at this point in his career to be very, very talented, which is what you want to see from a young horse. What about Good Magic? Here's a son of Curlin. We talked about Curlin and how he's a staple at the top of the sire list every year and a sire of sires. Now you have Good Magic. Talking about sire of sires, maybe Good Magic becomes the next big star.
I know he's having his first bulls year, and I know if you follow all the advertising, no sire has ever had a bad first bull. But these have a lot of class and expect a lot from them. They're coming out consistently with all the right parts and right size, and he himself is beautiful and has rounded out into a handsome, strong individual himself.
Yeah, he's so good.
I think he's Curlin's only son standing at stud, a grade one winner at 2 and 3.
Ooh. And value price, too, $35,000 for Good Magic out at Hill and Dale. You can go to hillanddalefarms.com. That's Hill, the letter N, Dale Farms, hillanddalefarms.com to learn more about all of the stallions. We didn't get a chance to talk about all of them in the segment here this morning, but you have Army Mule, you have Flincher, you have Cantharos, Lost Treasure is there. There are so many big-name horses on that stallion roster, and we got a chance to just kind of scratch the surface here this morning. Jared, listen, I can't thank you enough for all your support of what we do here on the show. Can't do it without you. Really appreciate it. And you and John and the entire team, Donato, do such a fantastic job, and you've done it for a very long time. So keep it rolling, my friend.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, Jared Burdine here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, general manager at Hill and Dale, and they really do. Just fantastic. Not just with the stallions, but with their sales consignments, too. Think about all the big-name horses that they've sold. All the numbers that they've accumulated over the years in the sales ring. They just do it the right way. HillandaleFarms.com is where you can go to learn more. And that's your Stallion Spotlight segment presented by Red Brand Fence for this Saturday morning. Time out for your Lexus Legends of the Turf, brought to you every Saturday at this time by the Lexus Store of Lexington on the corner of New Circle and Liberty here in Lexington, Kentucky. You go see the Godfather, Tony Attiano. You go see all the great folks at the Lexus Store. They'll take care of you if you're in the market for a new vehicle, pre-owned vehicle. Doesn't matter. They are your source right here in Lexington, Kentucky. When I come back, Saffy Joseph Jr. talks a little Barbados, and he talks about the Tampa Bay Derby. That's ahead, right after your Lexus Legends of the Turf.
For want of a nail, a shoe was lost. For want of a shoe, a race was lost. This is the story of the tragic demise of a thoroughbred who was thought by some to have been the greatest horse ever to don a set of racing plates. He raced in the colors of Darby Dan Farm and was trained by Lloyd Gentry. He was the son of Rebo out of Flower Bowl by Alibi, and by late April of his 3-year-old campaign had become the solid choice for the Kentucky Derby. He was a big, rock-solid colt who had muscles that literally rippled with raw power. In terms of conformation, he was some kind of a thoroughbred specimen. He won his first 7 races by an average margin of 5.5 lengths and never had a rival finish closer than 4 lengths to him. Incredible! He'd never gone over 7/8 of a mile in any of his wins until the Bluegrass Stakes at Keeneland on April 28, 1966. In that race, he was beaten a bare nostril by the very good Abe's Hope, but, as it turned out, that was his greatest performance of an abbreviated career, which in fact ended with that race. He had run the final 5 furlongs of that race on a sloppy racetrack on what amounted to 3 legs and a mountain of courage. That story well worth recounting. He had been reshod April 21st, 1 week before the Bluegrass, after he had been plated by one farrier, another put a new bar shoe on his left hind foot, which he had bruised in Florida. It appeared he might be carrying that foot a bit high on Sunday, April 24th, when he worked a mile in 140, and his stride was a measured one. Veteran horsemen well know that when a horse goes bad behind, it usually means trouble up front somewhere down the line. On April 27th, the morning before the Bluegrass, he worked 3/8 and 33-4 on a sloppy track. To the careful observer, it was apparent he was off a bit in his left front as he trotted back to the barn to be cooled out. In the Bluegrass the next afternoon, he broke like a cannon shot and was 6 in front going around the clubhouse turn. At just about the 5/8 pole, he took a noticeably bad step, almost stopping in midair, as a matter of fact, and from that point on, he continued on nothing more than sheer, pure, raw courage. You see, at that point of the misstep, he had fractured the wing of the coffin bone in his left forefoot, as it was discovered later. Braulio Baeza, the cool Panamanian who rode him in 6 of his 7 wins, said, quote, "He went around the turn fairly good, but as soon as he got into the straightaway on the backside, he tried to run out, which, in fact, hurt or sore horses are prone to do. Quote, "I tapped him on the shoulder a couple of times, trying to keep him straight, but he tried to get out all the way down the backside, and he was still trying to get out after the race," unquote. In that race, he galloped out 1.25 miles in 2:03-2. On Sunday, May 1st, 6 days before the Kentucky Derby, the fracture showed up in x-rays. And not only was he subsequently withdrawn from the run for the Roses, but his racing career was at an end. That marvelous thoroughbred, who later went on to outstanding seasons of production in the breeding shed, and who was, in some observers' eyes, the very best to ever grace American racetracks, was Graustark. His story is indeed a tragic yet memorable moment in thoroughbred racing.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Pin Oak Studs Alternation is a top 10 third crop sire by earnings, black type winners, and graded stakes winners. With nearly $7 million in earnings to date, Alternation was represented by 6 black type horses in 2019. From a second crop, 3-year-old daughter Serengeti Empress won the 2019 Grade 1 Kentucky Oaks and was runner-up in both the Grade 1 Test and Acorn Stakes. Serengeti Empress finished the year with a strong third to older mares in the Breeders' Cup Distaff and is a finalist for Eclipse Champion 3-year-old filly. By Distorted Humor, millionaire graded stakes winner Alternation stands at Pin Oak Stud.
I'm speaking with Joe Brown Nicholson of Nicholson Insurance Agency. Joe, can you explain how the claims process works? Knock on wood, I haven't experienced a claim recently and hope I never will, but what happens?
Well, Mike, after we are notified by the insured of an accident or event, we will submit a claim report to the company, giving basic details of the claim. A claims representative will then contact the insured to walk them through the claim settlement process. Most claims are settled promptly, efficiently, and to the complete satisfaction of the insured.
Well, that sounds fair.
Basically, the insured is buying an insurance policy, which is a promise to pay in the event of a covered claim. It also provides peace of mind absent of a claim. That's the way it works.
Thanks, Joe. For all your equine and general insurance needs, call Nicholson Insurance Agency at 859-224-7080. You gotta know Joe.
Airdrie Stud is proud to announce the arrival of Grade 1 winning millionaire Preservationist. The exceptionally talented son of Arch boasts Foundation mares Courtly D and Manad on the top and bottom of his blue-blooded pedigree. On the racetrack, he was one of 2019's best, taking the Grade 1 Woodward at Saratoga and Historic Suburban at Belmont Park.
And Preservationist has won the Suburban by 4.5 lengths over Catholic Boy and Pebble.
Preservationist, another exciting addition to the Airdrie Stud Stallion roster. Think about it.
The Florida Thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida Breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida Breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
I'm Manny Franco, and I listen to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
Under the mile marker, Rico Walton has his man in front and comfortably four by three lengths to Show Me the Money as they turn for home in the Derby. It is Are You Talking to Me, but here comes Show Me the Money down on the inside to the big challenge as they come well inside the final furlong. Are You Talking to Me, the only outside. Here comes Show Me the Money to put it down a great challenge as they race up to the wire. Are You Talking to Me comes on the right, and he's going to get home to win the ball. Bit of triple crown. Show Me the Money report 12 by a length and a half. Whoever part it, Are You Talking to Me from Show Me the Money, a long way back, 8 lengths back to Don Porto Sunny in third position.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. That call right there, the Barbados Derby in 2009, giving trainer Safi Joseph Jr. a Barbados Triple Crown sweep. Yeah, he is a Triple Crown winning trainer. And this year, here in 2020, he is training in the United States, as he has been for quite some time. And he is hoping to add the first leg of the American Triple Crown, the Run for the Roses, the Kentucky Derby, to his resume on the first Saturday in May. But before he does that, he has to get past the Tampa Bay Derby. Later this afternoon, he sends out the talented Florida bred Chance It, second choice on the morning line. And Safi is with me now here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Saf, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Things are good. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing good. In Tampa this morning. It's a bit cold, but it's refreshing.
Yeah, you know, I play that little clip there, and I know I've played it for you before, but when you hear that call, taking you back to 2009 with the Barbados Derby and that sweep of the Triple Crown, what are some of the things that come to mind?
It brought back good memories. I mean, he was definitely, at that time, the best horse I've ever had, and I think he trained me more than I trained him.
How so?
Just because when you have those kind of quality horses at that age, you think you know, but you don't really know. And then 10 years later, looking back, like, it's just amazing. He was a very tough horse to train. He was almost a bit of a runoff. And we didn't do much with him in between races. He would probably go very slow, and he would breeze once a week. And I remember people would always say, oh, when he went a mile, he couldn't go a mile and a half. And then when he went a mile and a half, they said he would never get a mile and a quarter with that kind of training. It just showed that he was just so superior to other horses, and he overcame all that.
Yeah, you have been kind of proving people wrong, if you will, and I don't even know if that's the right way to say it, but you've been doing that throughout your whole career. I mean, as you said, Are You Talking to Me kind of trained you and took you to heights that you didn't know you would get to at that point. And now here you are on the road to the Kentucky Derby with a horse in Chance It that is second choice on the morning line in the Tampa Bay Derby. I mean, come on, man. How's this all happening?
I don't know. This is what I dreamed of my whole life, and to be here and getting these chances, and I'm obviously very thankful for the owners giving me these opportunities, because without the owners, you can't achieve these things. And we have great owners supporting us, and we're just blessed and forever grateful for everything that's happening.
He was entered to run last week at Gulfstream, and you scratch because of the post position. That far outside post gets a much better draw at Tampa today, post number four.
that has to make you feel a little bit better and make you feel like you made the right call.
Yeah, well, I guess we want to know if we made the right call for later in the day, but yes, definitely no regrets. I think we give him now a good opportunity to show if he's good enough. And I mean, we're changing the scenario a bit. He's coming off his track that I would have preferred to run at home, but these are things that if he's going to get to the next level, he needs to overcome these things anyway. So we just hope the chances shows up today and runs his race. We feel like if he runs his race, he has talent as good as any three-year-old in that race.
How much different is that surface, Safi, the surface at Tampa, from the one at Gulfstream?
It's a lot different. I mean, Gulfstream, I would say, has just looking at it visually, probably has a lot more clay in that kind of aspect. But some people, I mean, you hear different thoughts. Some people say some horses don't like it, some horses do like it. But I think when you have a really good horse, they're supposed to get over most surfaces. I know some horses are horse courses, but I think a really good horse is supposed to get over most surfaces.
Yeah, and he's done that. I mean, obviously he's raced it exclusively at Gulfstream Park, but he's raced at various distances. He's had different jockeys on him. Nothing seems to faze this horse. Talk about his mental makeup, Safi.
He's very mentally strong. I mean, as far as he could be a bad colt if he wanted to be. The only thing he does is go in the air, but when it comes on race day, he knows to behave, and I hope he does that today at Tampa also. Shipping in, he's been a little fresh this morning because he's seen a noose around it. He's seen horses on the walkers. He's never seen that before. But he's been very well behaved on race day, and I hope he continues that today again. And that's probably his best asset. I mean, he can overcome a lot of different things, and I mean, he's just a quality horse. Everything he does, the way he does it, he just does it with class.
What do you say to Paco Lopez before the race, since you're giving him a leg up aboard this horse for the first time?
I mean, there's not much to say. Paco's obviously a good rider. Just wanted to break away from there. Hopefully he breaks away cleanly, and he puts him in a good spot where he's tactically enough where he can put him in a good spot. If he needs to lead, if we're going too slow, he can lead. And if he doesn't need to lead, he can keep him in the clear. And that's, you just want to get a clean trip. You get a clean trip, that's all you could hope for in racing. Hope you get a clean trip, and hope that your horse shows up and what's the deal will be.
You talked with me on this program before he won the Mucho Macho Man that same morning. So I'm hoping that, you know, the karma works out again for you and lightning strikes twice. And if that happens, you're coming on before his next race too, by the way. So just book that date if he gets past the Tampa Bay Derby today. But that race in the Mucho Macho Man, he showed a lot of courage that day. What were your thoughts on that performance?
Yes, he did show a lot of courage. He was coming out of a 4-month layoff. I mean, we thought we had it fit enough to run well. The race on paper wasn't easy going in, and I knew that probably anything below his best wouldn't have been able to win. At the eighth pole, I thought he was visually beaten because I didn't see how he was going to find more off a layoff like that, but he found a way to win, and that's what good horses do. And you would think that he should improve off that run. And we think that was actually his career best on the speed figures. And I mean, if he was to improve off that run, he will have to go here today with a really good chance. I mean, that's what we're hoping for.
Talking with trainer Safi Joseph Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Chance It going to the post as the second choice on the morning line. Yeah, one of the major players in today's Tampa Bay Derby. Saf, that race, the Mucho Macho Man, and this entire journey really has been extremely emotional for you. What's made it so emotional?
Just knowing how hard it was to get here. Like, it's taken a while. I mean, I know things don't happen right away, but we put in our dues and we worked hard to get it, and we're thankful that the opportunities have come now. And like a year and a half ago, sometimes it crossed your mind, are we going to get these kind of horses? How do we get these kind of horses? And I mean, it's just, I would say the last 8 months from the 9 months, it's almost surreal how things have unfolded. Like, I mean, apart from Chance, we've got Tony the Shape. She's on the Oaks Trail. Obviously, Mark Matthews has started it from a claimer to winning the Pennsylvania Derby. And then we've got a lot of other good horses in the barn also. So, I mean, I know how far we've come from, and I know where we're at right now. And I'm thankful for where we're at, and I'm very grateful and aware that we got to keep working hard, and hopefully everything continues.
It's special for you, too, because you get to do it alongside your dad. You get to do it with your family by your side. You're a great family guy, very close with your family, and that has to make it special, too.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And this whole trip, my mom came up. She doesn't come to the races much. My dad's here. My kids are here. My wife's here. And then some of my friends, my owners, some of my friends, they came up also. So it's, and that's what racing is. Racing brings family together, and it brings friendships. And when it works out, it's the best feeling ever. And when it doesn't work out, you've got to sleep it off, and you feel like you fell to the bottom. But you just keep moving forward. I mean, it's all worth it when it does work out. The feeling is priceless.
I can remember sitting down with you in your barn at Gulfstream about 4 or 5 years ago. Jude and I sat down with you for a full hour for our trainer talk show, and at that point you were hoping to get these kinds of horses. You were doing great things with horses that were not stakes caliber. They were claiming level horses, they were allowance horses, and you kept plugging along. And you said just a few moments ago you paid your dues, and now that you've gotten these good horses, you're making the most of the opportunity. Saf, what's been the key?
I mean, the key is I've learned a good system. I've come under a good system with my dad, and the key is to take care of the horse. That's the reality. I mean, when you take care of these horses and you treat them right, and you have them, even if you're not a good trainer, you take care of your horse, the horse is going to overcome the trainer because they'll get themselves fit with races and that kind of aspect. But I mean, so that's the key. You need the horses. And the horses are, that's why it's called horse racing. Don't get me wrong. You could have trainers that can ruin good horses too, but you need the horses, and that's the key. And I think we're pretty solid in everything we do. We're very hands-on. We're very, we want things done a certain way, and it must be done the best way possible. And that's what it is. Horses are about observation. The more you can observe, the more you're going to learn. Just the more you can be around them, the more you're going to learn. That's what we try to instill in everyone, to keep watching, keep looking, pick up subtle clues. I think that's what brings success.
Now, I'm starting to get a little bit jealous, man. You know, 4 or 5 years ago, Jude and I were about the only people that would interview Saffy Joseph, and now you're all over the place. You're on TVG, you're on the Fox shows, you're getting that national recognition you well deserve. What's that been like, that whole media frenzy around Saffy Joseph Jr.?
I mean, I think that comes with having success, and I know how important it is for the media to help the game and get it out there, so I try to do as much as I can, and I try to never say no, and once I can do it, I do it, because I think it's important that we educate not only the people that support the racing, our fans, but even new fans, to let them know that how much these horses mean to us, let them know how good these horses get treated for the most part, and that racing is a great game. It brings families together, and it brings friendships together, and the feeling of winning when it goes right is something that if you could just let everyone experience, racing will have so many more fans, it will have so many more participants. And because I don't think there's anything in the world that compares to when your horse wins a race, whether it be a 6250 claim or whether it be a stake race. I mean, for me, every win just means so much.
Yeah, and you won a big one last week too, the Devona Dale with Tonalist Shape, who you mentioned earlier, now undefeated 5-for-5, a leading contender for the Kentucky Oaks. Give me an update on her and you share your thoughts on that performance last week.
She came out of the race well, came out of the race very fresh, and that's a good thing you want to see. I mean, she was undefeated, and that was her stiffest test to date. Todd had a good filly in her, Todd Fletcher. Spice is nice, and she won very impressively first MO, and going in, we didn't know if we could beat her. I mean, we know our filly was a good filly, but we know she would have to be really tight on to beat Todd's filly, and she did it well. I didn't expect it to be on the lead, but she showed a new dimension that she was on the lead, and she kept going. And that's she has a lot of stamina to her, and to see her, both times she's been a mile now, she's been very forwardly placed, whereas when she's been shorter, she's come from behind. So, I mean, she's just a very good filly. There's no way to her. There's not much strength to her armor. She can win from in front. She can win from behind. She's won at variable distances, although I think she definitely, at her best, she needs to be going a mile plus, mile and an eighth. She'll probably even go a mile and a quarter. And she's won with 5 different riders, so she'll probably win with 5 different trainers also. So it just shows you how good of a filly she is. I mean, she's not flashy on the morning. She's not the most amazing filly to look at, but when it comes race day, she does the most important thing, that's win.
Saffy, 1 year ago, you were in Barbados for the Sandy Lane Barbados Gold Cup. That will take place later this afternoon, and a field of 9 has been entered into the race this year. A few familiar faces, including Celestial Storm, Tell me a little bit about Barbados and what this race means and what this day means to the island of Barbados.
I mean, it's the biggest race in Barbados this year, and now I would say over the last 8 to 10 years, probably a little more, it's started to get international recognition. I mean, I think just owners just want to win it because of the prestige. The purse is only $120,000 US, but the feeling of winning and the atmosphere is comparable to any big race around the world. And I mean, you're so much closer to the horses when they're running over there. I don't think there's any track, very few in the world, that the spans are that close. And I think that's what separates it from different tracks. I mean, obviously the money's not as big, but the feeling is there and the pride, and that's what racing is about. Just out trying to hope you have the best horse, and it's not all about the money all the time. And that's what the Barbados Gold Cup brings. And I think that's why it's attracted a lot of big owners from over the different world to try to win it.
What about that horse Renaissance Frolic? Any shot in that race today?
Yeah, I think he has a really good chance. I mean, he was bought specifically for the race by Sir David Seal, who's an owner of ours. He's been a longtime supporter even in the U.S. He was one of the first supporters I've ever had. And he's bought to win this race for Sir David. Sir David's won it 8 times. And we hope we can make it a 9th for him.
Who's going to saddle that horse for you over there?
Liz Dean's been overseeing them, but I think her cousin Richard Dean is going to saddle them today for us.
Good, good. Yeah, the horse will run in your name. Could be a huge day, man. You could win the Barbados Gold Cup, the Tampa Bay Derby. All right, I'll stop right now. I don't want to put those thoughts in your head. Let's get past the Tampa Bay Derby first, and then we'll tackle Barbados.
Correct. I mean, it could be a huge day, and we just hope the horses go up, show up, and run their race. And that's all you could ask for. Once horses show up and run their race, that's the most important thing as a trainer. That's all you can ask for, basically, that they get a fair chance and they run the race.
Good luck today, Baba. Thanks for taking the time.
Thanks a lot, Mike. Take care. Anytime.
Right. Safi Joseph Jr. here on the Horse Racing Radio Network, nicknamed Baba by his friends back in Barbados. We'll see if he can win them both. How cool would that be? He'll take one. I know he'll take one or the other. He'd love to win them both, though. Like all of our guests who appear on the program, Safi receives a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'm back with your Industry Star of the Week, presented by Stuart Morris next, plus Gary Contessa, Todd Pletcher, Chris McCarron, all ahead in the second half of the show. This is the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Power.
Caraconti has won.
Passion.
It's Caraconti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Caraconti and O'Donnell. Caraconti.
Gainsway Stallion Caraconti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4/5, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Caraconti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. The only second crop sire with graded stakes winners on dirt and turf, Caraconti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes Sol Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes, and undefeated colt Kenzai Warrior, who was pointed to the Group 1 English 2000 Guineas. Value priced at just $10,000, Caraconti gets the gold, according to Chris McGrath's value podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Caraconti at Gainesway.
Hi, Tony.
Hey, Matthew.
There's a reason why Tony's Steaks and Seafood is my favorite restaurant. It's because I want to feel part of the family. Isn't that right, Tony?
That's right. There's a saying on the wall that I truly believe in. There's always room for one more at our table. We just want you to be part of our family.
And believe me, you will be. It's Tony's Steaks and Seafood right across from Triangle Park. Visit them at TonysSteaksAndSeafood.com.
Learn the business of horses in the world's only accredited equine business program, the University of Louisville Equine Business Program. The University of Louisville has a legacy of excellence educating and developing industry leaders for over 33 years. Classes are taught by industry experts in the state-of-the-art facilities located in the heartland of America's equine industry. The University of Louisville Equine Business Program. When it comes to horses, we mean business. For more information, visit business.louisville.edu/equine.
It's time now to shine the spotlight on the Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week.
1-5, easy money if you want to call it that, as Hidden Scroll is double digits in front while under a canter.
Johnny V takes a knee and runs out the clock, and Hidden Scroll is a double-digit winner.
Hidden Scroll, the four-year-old son of Darley Stallion Hardspun, earned a 102 buyer in his return off a layoff at Gulfstream on Sunday. He won that sixth furlong allowance by a whopping 12 lengths, and that dominating win makes him your Darley Taking the Reins Performer of the Week. Darley Stallion Hardspun is Danzig's last Grade 1 winning son, who sired more First Crop Stakes winners than any other stallion before him. Hidden Scroll is Hardspun's second horse to run a triple-digit buyer in 2020. Only Spitestown can match that number, and no stallion has more. Visit DarleyAmerica.com to learn more about Hardspun and all the Darley Stallions.
This is Florent Giroux, and you are listening to HRRN.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
You know, it's so much more than just training for them. I have such a great, large staff of people that have been with me for so many years, and led by my brother Neil's been with me since I started training in Dubai, and his wife, Chris, and then exercise riders, grooms. We've had, you know, many grooms with me for 20 years. So there's no I in team, and it's a team effort, and it was very difficult to have to tell all this help that I was going to do something different. But they'll all land on their feet, and I think a lot of the grooms are going to work for a good outfit. And Neil and Trish, I'm not sure what they're going to do. But working for the Montcoon family is a dream, and 100% of trainers in the world want to train for the Montcooms, and I was privileged enough to do it for 26 years, and I just decided that this opportunity was too good to pass up. Louis Size, I mean, I might be a week late, and I had it 2 weeks ago, and I had a pretty good payday. But most people know him as a great jockey, but he's also a great family man with a wife and three beautiful daughters, and just a, you know, great person, and we're looking forward to having a great run and successful between us both. Hopefully we have a good run.
That's trainer Kieran McLaughlin talking about leaving his longtime profession of training racehorses, moving on to be a jocks agent for Louis Saez. Some great comments there from Kieran, and he did have one of the dream jobs that you can have in thoroughbred racing. Todd Pletcher will now take over the Shadwell horses, and you're going to hear from Todd coming up second half of the show around 9:23 Eastern time. Time now for your industry star of the week, presented by Stuart Morris, who, of course, offers a boutique full-service bloodstock operation. He wants to thank his owners, his clients, and his team. He knows his success is because of you. And with multiple stakes horses over the past several years, including Henley's Joy, Our Brain Trust, and Malagasy, Stuart Morris is your source for success at the highest levels. Well, this week on Trainer Talk, Susan Ditter joined me for the full hour. It was a really, really fun hour. You can go back and listen on our website. She saddled roughly 20 horses, before she finally broke through with that first winner this past week at Gulfstream. And she started by talking about maybe feeling the pressure a little bit after those 20 starters and not getting that first win.
I feel the pressure from everyone, just because you're out there to win. But I personally, I was feeling the pressure. Like, I was just getting like, oh, please, something's got to, you know, just break through, and it finally did.
Was Chuck there with you too?
Yes, he was.
Yeah, it's so cool. I've known Chuck many, many years since I started this network. Started on radio in 2003. Chuck was one of the first people that I had the chance to meet, and we've been friends ever since. He's one of the true good guys in the sport, and I'm so glad that you talked about him being, I don't know, I'll use the word mentor for you, but somebody who you got a chance to work with and now to win with one of his horses. I'm so glad he was able to be there too.
Yes, and I'm actually lucky because he's, you know, it's really nice because I've got a lot of people in my foundation that I came up under that are very good horsemen, and quite a few of them I still can go to. And the benefit with Chuck is thankfully he's still actually on the grounds because he started the shavings and the GHPA yep. company over here. So if I do have something that I'm kind of hemming and hawing, he'll come over and look, and pretty much I'm always on the same path because we've always had the same mindset. Even when we were both assistants for different trainers, we've always had the same mindset on horses of what needs to be done. And he just reminds me to have my confidence in myself and my decisions. And that, yes, I am going on the right path. But it is still nice for the short while I have it, that I can still rely on him if I do have that question.
Yeah, and he would be the first one to be there for you, too, if you had any questions whatsoever. I know the type of person he is. He would be the first person to say, what can I do for you?
Yes, and he does.
Yep.
And it's funny. At first, I was relying on him heavy because I'd been working for him for over 10 years. So when he stepped back, it's still out of habit. I call him and say, hey. And then after a little while, he's like, Susan, I'm starting my own thing. I don't have time. You know what you're doing. Just do it. And he goes, I have the faith in you. That's why I turned it over to you. And then you just step back and you go, oh, yeah, I can do it. Because I've done it before on my own for other trainers when they haven't been there and when Chuck wasn't there and when I was Elliot Walden's assistant. Elliot was always in another state, and I always had my own strings. And you do it, but you kind of get so used to being back when we moved to Florida, being under the umbrella and always having them right there. You know, I just had to remember that I have my big girl panties on, and I need to remember that and go on with it.
That's Susan Ditter, our industry star of the week. And yeah, a longtime assistant for Chuck Simon. She worked with him for 10 years. He served as a mentor, and he was there for her first win back on February 27th at Gulfstream Park. So congratulations to Susan on being named our industry star of the week. You can go back and hear the full hour visit with her at horseracingradio.net with our trainer talk show presented by Fasig Tipton. And I'm back with hour number two right after we pause 10 seconds for station identification. This is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
From the rail to your radio, this is the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Victory Gallop is still third, but he's coming. Real Quiet is a bit leg weary. Victory Gallop is trying. Here's the line. Real Quiet wins the 124th running of the Kentucky Derby.
This is unbelievable. Zenyatta, what a performance. One wheel. Impossible.
Welcome to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence.
On the inside, on the cottage board, on the outside, Soul of the Manor, and here he is, the unconquerable, invincible, unbeatable Cigar!
And here it is, the 37-year wait is over, American Foal, it's finally the one, American Foal has won the Triple Crown!
Now, here's Mike Penna.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on this first Saturday in the month of March 2020. Happy to have you back with me. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. Three Derby points races on the docket for today. The Tampa Bay Derby, the Gotham at Aqueduct, and the San Felipe. And you got a chance to hear from Safi Joseph Jr. in the first half of the program just a short time ago, talking about Chance It, second choice on the morning line in the Tampa Bay Derby. Later in the second half of the program, Todd Pletcher, you're going to hear from him. He has won the Tampa Bay Derby a record five times. He has three horses entered this year. That interview coming up at 9:23 Eastern. And then Chris McCarron going to join me around 9:40. The Hall of Fame jockey has won the San Felipe more than any jockey in history, seven times, as a matter of fact. And Chris will look back on those victories and some of his favorite moments, and also his three wins in the big cap, the first one coming with the great Ali Sheba, who defeated Ferdinand. And Chris will be joining me in studio to look back on those. If you missed any portion of the show, head back to our website, horseracingradio.net. The podcast is available at your leisure. That's horseracingradio.net and Horse Racing Radio Network on Apple Podcasts. Poll question for today. This is great. Getting a lot of responses, too. You can go to @HRN on Twitter. You can go to Horse Racing Radio Network on Facebook, or you can email the show, mike@horseracingradio.net. I simply want to know, where did your love of horse racing begin? Hashtag for love of the game. Where did your love of horse racing begin? So many great responses coming in. Don't have time to read them at the moment, but I'll try to get to some of them later in the program. Trainer Gary Contessa is one of two trainers who called it quits this week. Kieran McLaughlin, the other one, you heard from him in the first half of the program, that soundbite talking about training for the Mock Tombs and now moving on to be a jocks agent.
Gary Contessa also hoping to stay involved with horse racing, maybe on the racetrack management side. But for now, he says goodbye to his training career of more than 35 years, and he's with me now here on HRRN. Gary, good morning.
Good morning, Mike. How you doing?
Things are good. How about you, my friend? How's everything up your way? Some news coming out this week, obviously, that you're going to hang it up, and that was sad news for a lot of people, but I know you're looking forward to a new chapter.
Well, you know, I kind of told Martin Panzer, David O'Rourke, I told Naira, you know, in confidence that I was probably gone at the end of March. And then I was broadsided by Kieran's announcement. And if you read Kieran's interview in the Daily Racing Form, it's exactly what's happening in my life. So I said, you know what, this is a good time to come forward and continue the discussion. So what happened to the New York trainers? And I've been training in New York my whole life. I mean, I was with Laz Pereira, Frank Martin. I was assistant trainer, Stanley Huff. I mean, I'm a New Yorker born and raised. I bleed New York racing my whole life. And what happened was the Department of Labor came in and said, we have to punch a time clock, and we have to give extra hours for this and extra hours for that. And, you know, it's kind of – it's a strange business because, I mean, if a horse gets sick, the groom is there with him and everything else. And to compound things, we can't pay minimum wage at the track if we use H-2B visa people, which I do. So the H-2B visa prevailing wage is about $5 or $6 an hour above minimum wage. And the rule says if you have a H-2B visa person and you're paying them prevailing wage, you have to pay all your employees in your entire stable at that same rate of pay. So the Department of Labor came in. They told us how they wanted things done. They hammered us pretty good as far as fines go and whatnot. So January 1st, I tried it their way. I punched the clock. I paid prevailing wage, which brings it up to close to $20 an hour, grooms, hot walkers, everybody. And at the end of 2 months, gave all the information to my accountant, and he came back to me and said, Gary, this business is costing you almost $150 a day. Well, we all know trainers, for the most part, can only charge about $100 a day. So that puts you in a very precarious position of losing $50 per day per horse, if you do it the right way. So the way I looked at it is I had three choices. I could do it the Department of Labor way, which I can't afford to do. I could cheat, make two sets of books and try and screw people and pay them off the books. Can't do that. Not after 35 years. I'm not about to cheat. Or I could cut corners with the horses, feed lesser feed, use lesser bedding, get rid of the night watchman, get rid of the day watchman. I can't do that either. I am not going to train horses at anything less than the highest possible standards. I'm not going to cheat the government at my age and try and develop two sets of books and pay people off the books. And I can't charge owners $150 a day. So it was my time to stop. You know, it was just I didn't see any other way. I don't see any other way around this mess. And I don't know how the little guys are going to survive. I guess if I was still 30 years old, 35 years old, I could groom my own horses. I used to ride my own horses. I used to pony my own horses. But as you get older and you have a smaller stable, you can't do that. You can't take care of all your own horses. So it's impossible to save money and follow the Department of Labor protocol.
Well, and you mentioned, Gary, some of the similarities to Kieran's story. And it was in December when Kieran took his horses down to Florida and said, look, I'm probably not coming back to New York. So he was kind of the first one to say, this is not going to work economically for us in New York. And now you're saying the same thing. Is this potentially just the tip of the iceberg, just scratching the surface with trainers that we might see having to call it quits because it's just too expensive to train?
Well, when I was a so-called, quote-unquote, super trainer, when I had 100 horses, 150 horses in training,
yep.
You know, when I was leading trainer in New York, I've been leading trainer in New York 17 times. When I was leading trainer in New York, I had 150 horses. So even if it cost me $150 a day, I could make it up on the other side. You know, Todd, can make it up on the other side. Chad can make it up on the other side. Linda Rice can make it up on the other side. Billy Mock can make it up on the other side. But when you're Gary Contessa and you're down to like 40 horses, half of them are claiming horses, half of them are maidens getting ready to run, you're no longer in a position to make up money on the other side. So what I think you're going to see is this probably spells the end of a lot of smaller trainers. I don't know how they're going to do it short of doing all the work themselves or cheating. And by cheating, I don't mean cheating like people talk about cheaters. I mean you have to cut corners on the horses. To me, that's a cheat. Or you have to cut corners with the Department of Labor. To me, that's a cheat. So that's what I mean by cheating. The smaller guys are going to find it more and more difficult to make it if they follow the protocol that's been put in place by the Department of Labor.
Joined by trainer Gary Contessa, after 35 years, as you're hearing, he will wrap up his training career. He has saddled, to date anyways, 2,364 career winners. It has been quite a career for Gary, which, again, will come to an end here shortly. Gary, one thing that one of your quotes that I actually really loved in the article that announced your retirement was, you said, "I love sharing this game with people, and I love bringing racing to the common people who want to learn more about it." So what's next for Gary Contessa? What's the next chapter hold?
Well, as you may or may not know, I do 60 barn tours a year and invite the whole world to come. And I mean, they get hundreds of people show up at my barn in Saratoga, and I do 60 barn tours a year. I also do clinics at my barn. And I mean, we've had hundreds of people show up for confirmation clinics. I've done a walking tour of the Saratoga backside. I've done, you know, horse psychology, how to make racing better, all these things. I once sold out the arena at Fazek Tipton to do a discussion on how do we make racing better, and people were standing to listen to that. It was a lot of fun. So I love sharing this business. Since 2012, when Charlie Hayward was CEO of NYRA, I've been trying to get on the management side of racing. I think I have a tremendous amount of insight and positivity that I could bring to racing. I've spoken to First Racing. I've spoken to Belinda Stronach. I've spoken to Craig Fravel. I've spoken to David O'Rourke, Martin Panza. As of yet, I'm waiting for that phone to ring. I think I could do a huge positive side. You know, every racetrack needs a buffer between the horsemen and management. There always seems to be a wall up there. And Bruce Johnstone did that job, and he was so great at that job for NYRA. And I'm not looking for his job. I'm looking for an opportunity to really make a difference on the management side of racing. And I'll wait as long as it takes, because I really think that I could be a positive. So that's what I'm open to. But I'm pretty much open to anything. I've gotten some very interesting phone calls over the last few days. You know, I was talking to Kenny McPeak about his Horse Racing Now app and how he needs somebody to promote it. And I spoke to another friend in the business who could use somebody. I'm open to suggestion, but my heart is on the management side of racing. I really think I could make a difference on that side of racing.
Well, Gary, I'll never forget the experience we had when you took Uncle Si to the Kentucky Derby, and the folks with Wounded Warrior Stables were there, and we shared our Derby box that we had with them and hosted some of those Wounded Warriors and their families, and it was an amazing experience, and I can't thank you enough for getting that horse there and allowing us here on the network to have that type of experience. It was truly life-changing for me.
And I'll tell you what, you'll find that every time you bring people to the races and you do something positive for them, it's life-changing for them. I can't tell you the feedback I've had. You know, in the barn tours that I've given away, I normally give them away to charities, and they bid on them, like Special Olympics and all the local charities, the food pantry, everybody. And one year, Kevin Bacon bought the barn tour from Special Olympics, and I think he paid like $16,000 for it. And his wife and his brother and everybody showed up, and we became good friends. I let them stay at my house, and it's amazing the response you get when you open that door, the back door that people don't see, when you open that door to racing. And I would love to see programs in place to let people see what it's like on the backside of racing. Let them have that look into racing that they really can't see from the outside, you know. And I've seen what it does for people, and it's such a positive that I'd love to see more of it.
Well, Gary, congratulations on a remarkable training career. All the best with the new chapter of your life. I know that you're going to land on your feet and that somebody's going to be picking up the phone and calling you, especially if they hear this interview. Really appreciate the visit this morning, and all the best moving forward.
Thanks a lot, Mike. I really appreciate it.
All right, Gary Contessa here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Like all of our guests, is going to receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. When I come back, we'll turn our attention to the all-time leading trainer in the history of the Tampa Bay Derby, Mr. Todd Pletcher. You'll hear from him next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Hello, I'm Michael Blowen, founder of Old Friends Thoroughbred Retirement Farm. One of our highest priorities for these living legends is safety. That's why the fence we trust most at Old Friends is the V-Mesh Keepsake from Red Brand. Keepsake features a V-Mesh weave to prevent hooves from getting caught, and the mesh design flexes on impact. Learn more about the quality, safety, and long-lasting value of Keepsake V-Mesh Horse Fence by visiting redbrand.com.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with two Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FTBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Time-tested Broken Vow continues to deliver quality black-type stakes horses at a 15% clip. The top son of Unbridled has sired over 150 black-type horses, 80 black-type winners, and over $75 million in earnings. Among the 12 black-type horses sired by Broken Vow in 2019 was dual Canadian Classic winner Tone Broke, winner of classic races on dirt and turf. Also the sire of Imprimis, the Speedy Keeneland graded stakes winner of over $440,000. Give your mare a great start with a proven sire. Broken Vow, standing at Pin Oak Stud.
Grade 1 winner and track record setter Lee. Like their sire, his first crop runners have excelled on both dirt and turf, including stakes winner and graded stakes performer Muskoka Gold and 2-year-old stakes winning filly Vast, with juveniles selling over $400,000 and yearlings bringing up to $650,000. The sky is the limit for this promising young stallion. Lee, standing at Claiborne Farm.
Visionary design, visceral performance, and imaginary technology. That's Lexus. When every detail, every moment, and every emotion is crafted by Lexus, it leads to amazing. Experience artistry that inspires, design that compels, and engineering that excites. This is Mike Pena, and I can tell you personally, as a Lexus owner, the enjoyment you'll experience from driving any of the Lexus model lines is unparalleled. Visit the Lexus store of Lexington today and see what I've been talking about for nearly 15 years. The people truly make the difference. Lexus has also been a longtime supporter of the horse industry, with a Keeneland shop located at the Lexus store of Lexington and through their sponsorship of Keeneland's Lexus Raven Run Stakes each fall. And remember, when you go to the Lexus store, ask for the Godfather, Tony Attiano. Talk horses and experience amazing in your brand new Lexus.
Unanimous champion 2-year-old and 3-time Grade 1 winner Classic Empire got off to a fantastic start with his first weanlings at the November sales. Averaging over $100,000 from 27 sold, up to 8 times his initial $35,000 stud fee. Bred on the same cross as champion freshman sire American Pharoah, Classic Empire's outstanding race record is backed up with a stallion's pedigree. Being from the family of Harlan's Holiday, Ride the Rails, and Bold Nijin. Standing for just $20,000, Classic Empire looks like a serious value for 2020.
Hi, this is Penelope Miller, and you're listening to Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
And the field turns for home. Noble's Thomas has the lead. Super Saver down in there. Prince that is impressed. Super Saver, Calvin Burrell. One furlong from the Derby here. Noble's Thomas comes in second. Teddy Apollo is now third. McFusion from the Big Bulls at now fourth on the outside. And they're coming down to the finish. And it is Super Saver. A late run from Icebox. But it's Super Saver and Calvin Burrell. The unflappable Calvin Burrell. Riding that rail to victory once again in the Kentucky Derby.
Tom Durkin with a call of the 2010 running of the Kentucky Derby. Super Saver giving Super Trainer Todd Pletcher his first Derby victory. Ironically, Super Saver finished third in the Tampa Bay Derby. Didn't win. Todd's won that race a record five times, looking for six with three contenders later this afternoon. And we'll talk, or you'll hear from Todd Pletcher coming up in just about 3 or 4 minutes. But first, it's time for Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman, presented by Spendthrift.
They're all in line. And they're off.
Spendthrift Farm presents Calling All Three-Year-Olds with Bobby Newman.
Last weekend was highlighted by the Fountain of Youth at Gulfstream, and it was supposed to be the coming back party of Dennis's moment, who hadn't raced since stumbling badly at the start of the Breeders' Cup Juvenile last November. He got away cleanly from the gate this time, but just didn't fire and finished far back. The runaway winner was Ate Andian. Despite a tough outside post, he was gunned to the lead at the start and never looked back, crushing the field by over 8 lengths and covering the mile in a 16th in a solid time of 1:43 flat. He earned 50 Derby points with the win, which should be enough to guarantee a spot in this year's Kentucky Derby. Three huge Derby preps today, each worth 50 points to the winners. Let's start at Santa Anita with the San Felipe Stakes. Bob Baffert's undefeated pair of Thousand Words and Authentic head the strong field that also includes up-and-comer Honor AP and Breeders' Cup Juvenile Champion Storm the Court. Would be fun to see what happens if they all bring their A games today. Tampa Bay Downs holds their marquee event today, the Tampa Bay Derby. A full field goes to the post, including Sam F. Davis winner Sole Volante and the ultra-consistent Chance It, who scratched from the Fountain of Youth last weekend after drawing a bad post. But there are several others who have big shots at upending the top two, including recent maiden winner Spa City and Market Analysis. On paper, it looks like there should be a fast pace, which could make favorite Sole Volante's closing kick tough to handle once again. Aqueduct hosts the Gotham Stakes today. Mischievous Alex comes off a resounding win in the Swale Stakes at Gulfstream, but he may need to continue to improve to defeat the likes of War Stopper, Attachment Rate, and Untitled, among others. Looks like a great betting race. I'll be back with this week's top five list right after this word from Spendthrift.
Spendthrift Farm is at it again, now offering breeders our best incentives yet, including deep discounts on young stallions and proven stallions. And for the first time, 30 days paid boarding at the farm of your choice so that you can breed your mare to a stallion from the most diverse roster in North America without the burden of boarding costs. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
This week's top five list of Derby contenders looks like this. Number 1,000 Words, undefeated. We'll see him later today in the San Felipe at Santa Anita. Number 2, Authentic, also undefeated. Winner of the Sham last time out. He's also going in the San Felipe today. Number 3, Independence Hall, suffered his first defeat last time out. We should see him March 28th in the Florida Derby. Number 4, Sole Volante, the morning line favorite in the Tampa Bay Derby today. And number 5 is Tiz the Law, winner of the Holy Bull Stakes. He, too, should be seen in the Florida Derby on March 28th. That's your Calling All Three-Year-Olds segment presented by Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm.
Well, the Tampa Bay Derby is one of three Derby points races on the docket today down in Tampa Bay, Florida. And if history is any indication, you better not overlook Todd Pletcher. He has three contenders in there. And yesterday, he took time to visit with Anthony on Red Brand Radio. Here's the interview.
Joined now by trainer Todd Pletcher. He'll take three shots at his sixth win in the signature event down at the Oldsmar Florida Oval tomorrow. Todd Pletcher, welcome to Red Brand Radio. Thanks for some time today, Todd.
Thank you.
Why do you think this race has been such a good spot for your horses this time of year?
Well, I think someone asked me the other day, you're going for your sixth. I said, yeah, that's great, but I think I've lost like 12.
What do you what about the timing of this race? You've had a ton of success in this race. In fact, Super Saver finished third in 2010, and he'd go on to give you your first Kentucky Derby. So not only do you have to, it doesn't necessarily mean you have to win it. You've just had a ton of success prepping your horses in the Tampa Bay Derby.
Well, I think the one thing about it is on the calendar, it's in a really good spot. It gives you an opportunity to run back in a month in either the wood or the bluegrass. If you need another week, like we did with Super Saver, get the Arkansas Derby as a possibility. If you want to run back in 3 weeks, you got the Florida Derby. So, it's positioned really well on the calendar. It's in a good spot. And I think Tampa's a great surface. It's a good place to get legged up, move forward into another spot. And, we've been fortunate not only with, our Tampa Derby horses, but we took Always Dreaming there. As a maiden and won there. We took Vino Rosso there as a and ran in a one of the then. We took Magna Moon there and ran in a one of the then. So they do a great job there. Allison DeLuca's terrific racing secretary, does a great job of setting up the races. And, it's a really good place to get young horses ready to move on to the big dances you're hoping to get to.
You mentioned the surface, Todd, and we always hear about how quirky Tampa Bay Downs can be. How's it different from Gulfstream and from some of the other surfaces you run your horses on day in and day out? And do you have to train them a little differently when you're getting ready to ship down to Oldsmar?
No, I mean, I think it's probably gotten a little bit of a bad rap in terms of being a quirky surface. I mean, I think it's like a lot of surfaces. Some horses like it more than others. Vino Rosso, even though we ran him there three times, he didn't particularly love it. Especially seemed to struggle on the turns a little bit. But people seem to think of it as like maybe a deeper track or a closer's track, where actually it tends to kind of favor horses that want to run close to the pace. So, I think generally it's a very safe surface. It's a very good surface to leg horses up. Not everyone loves it, but they seem to come out of it well and move forward coming off of it. And, ultimately that's what you're looking to do at this stage of the game.
10 years ago, you won your first Kentucky Derby with Super Saver. He finished third in this Tampa Bay Derby. Talk to me a little about that, and you mentioned getting him to the Arkansas Derby. How important do you think that run in the Tampa Bay Derby was for his Derby victory?
Oh, it was huge. I mean, we were struggling to get on course, basically throughout the winter and the early spring, and a lot of people say that in order to be successful in the Kentucky Derby, you need to have everything go perfectly all winter and spring. And I can tell you firsthandedly, that is not the case. Nothing seemed to go smoothly for Super Saver throughout the winter. Even after we got sort of a good race into him in the Tampa Derby, he got sick in between the Tampa Derby and what we were projecting to go to the wood. Missed a few days of training, had to, come up with plan B and ended up going to the Arkansas Derby. So Tampa Derby was huge, getting him, a start under his belt and ultimately getting him ready for the Arkansas Derby. And then, it was a case in his part that really from the time that we got to the Arkansas Derby to the Kentucky Derby, everything went perfectly. We had a really great 3 weeks with him. And, the 3 months prior to that were tough. We were always trying to play catch up and get on schedule. And, we were fortunate that everything kind of fell into place at exactly the right time.
You've won five of these Tampa Bay Derbies, like we said. First one back in 2004 with Limehouse. Last one in 2017 with Taprit. You've won two derbies in the last 10 years, Kentucky derbies. What's the same, what's different in your approach to preparing a Kentucky Derby horse now as opposed to 15 or 16 years ago when Limehouse grabbed the money in this event in 04?
I mean, I think probably the biggest difference is that we don't run as often as we used to. And, Limehouse, a really good horse, ended up finishing fourth in the Kentucky Derby, won the Hutchison, won the Tampa Derby. You know, it was a horse that ran quite a few times as a two-year-old. And I think today's horse, you have to coddle a little more. You have to space the races out a little more. And, you know, sometimes you can arrive too soon. You can get ready too soon. You can be peaking in January or February. Obviously, the goal is to peak on the first Saturday in May. So, you know, we try to manage it that way when we know we have one early enough that's good enough to do that. But in some cases, sometimes, you know, you're playing it by each horse's schedule. And so, you know, everyone's always trying to compare previous years or previous, you know, horses that ran in the Derby in years past to the ones that are running this year. And every year is different, you know. I mean, sometimes you have horses that maybe, you know, you take a Justify, for example, that didn't break his maiden until February 18th. And, you know, I'm sure that wasn't Bob's plan A. It's just the hand that he was dealt. And, you know, he did a great job of working around that. And then, you know, I think even with American Pharoah, he was hoping to be ready a little sooner. And, you know, with Always Dreaming, we were fortunate enough to kind of think we had a Derby horse in December, and we kind of worked his schedule around getting there and peaking at the right time, which we were able to do. But, you know, the point is every year is different. Every horse is different. You get one crack at it with a three-year-old, and you got to make the best of it. But you can't necessarily draw on what you did with a horse in, you know, 5 years ago and apply it to one that you're trying to get ready for this year.
All right, let's run through the three contenders you have tomorrow, and I want to still ask you briefly about the news this week, taking over the Shadwell horses from your main man, Kieran McLaughlin. Texas Swing breaks from the rail. Javier Castellano rides Son of Curlin. He has, like you mentioned, you know, you like to get those horses over this course, and you've had a lot of success here. He broke his maiden here at Tampa back on February 8th.
Broke his maiden there on Sam Davis Day, and, you know, we went there with the reason that we wanted to stretch him out around two turns. Thought he ran very well. Figures suggest it was a good race. That being said, it's a step up in class. There's some more experienced, more seasoned horses in here. We like what we've been seeing. I think Curlin's a world-class stallion, bred to run longer, got a lot of things working for him. He's doing well, training well. Good, strong, healthy kind of three-year-old that you like. I like what I'm seeing in terms of physical development. Just, you know, my biggest concern is just, does he have enough seasoning at this stage, you know, in his third start to step up against some horses that, you know, have a few more races under their belt.
John Velasquez rode Texas Swing last time. John Velasquez rode Market Analysis. He's going to break from post five. Did you give Johnny the option as to which one of these to ride? Did you make the assignment? He stays with Market Analysis, who broke his maiden first time out, going 7/8. Always impressive, an impressive feat over at Gulfstream Park.
Yeah, I love the way he ran. Horse has been training really, really well. Tall, tall ass to go from a 7-furlong maiden to a 1/16 graded stake. You know, tough call for Johnny. Likes both horses a lot. Can't ride two, so, you know, that's the way he went. But, you know, love the way both horses are training, and, you know, could come down to who gets the better trip out of the two.
Yeah, and finally, the maiden, Unrighteous. It's not something you do. The blinkers go on. Joe Bravo's going to ride for the first time. He's a big price. You usually take a more conservative approach, but you got this Son of Violence, who you know plenty about violence. This horse ran really well behind Spa City, who's probably going to be a quarter his price in this race tomorrow for Kieran. Talk to me about this horse and this ambitious placing.
Love the way he trained before his debut. Was a little disappointed in his first start. Thought he would run better. Came back, trained really well. Ran a great race against Spa City. Those two separated themselves, I think, maybe 13, 14 lengths ahead of the third-place horse. Luis Saez has ridden him, worked him a lot, likes him. Commented afterwards, he felt like he had more horse. He was a little shy of Spa City in front of him. Felt like he needed blinkers. Worked him back in blinkers, worked well. Actually, my biggest concern is just that we're backing up to a 1/16. And, you know, I think ultimately he wants to run longer. But talented horse, one we've liked a lot. Calumet's never afraid to take a shot, and we felt like, you know, it's kind of crunch time. You got to step up now, or we're running out of time, so we got to see where we are.
Speaking of running out of time, we have a couple of minutes left. Want to talk to you about the news this week. You're taking over the Shadwell horses from Kieran McLaughlin, who is going to become Luis Saez's jocks agent. You and Kieran are very close. I had the pleasure of sitting with both of you guys at our BCCA fundraiser at Saratoga last summer with both your families. A couple of things. Kieran has said that working for the Maktoum family is a dream, and 100% of the trainers in the world want to train for the Maktoums, and that he would love nothing more than to hand the Kentucky Derby trophy to the Maktoum family at Churchill Downs. Those two statements, and I'm sure Kieran has expressed those to you personally, and you've heard them publicly. What does that do in your approach to taking a job like this?
You know, first of all, I'm very grateful for the opportunity from Shadwell, and Kieran played a big part in that, and having known Kieran since 1989 when we were both working for Lucas, I know how much respect he has for Sheikh Mohammed, Sheikh Hamdan, you know, tremendous opportunity for him over the years. And, you know, I'm just very grateful to, you know, at some point to get some of those horses and with Kieran's blessing. And Kieran's probably the most popular guy on the backside. I think he'll do fantastic things with Luis Saez, who's a young, fantastic rider and a great person as well. And so, you know, I'm just pleased to get the opportunity.
All right. Well, Todd, thanks for some time today. Best of luck in your pursuit of Tampa Bay Derby win number 6 in Oldsmar, Florida. Take 3 swings on Saturday with The Maiden Unrighteous, Market Analysis, and Texas Swing. Good luck, Todd. Thanks.
Thanks, Anthony.
Great stuff from Todd Pletcher. Again, a 5-time winner of the Tampa Bay Derby. He'll look to add to that record later this afternoon. And now inheriting the horses that Kieran was training for the Maktoums and Shadwell, and that's going to be a special relationship, too. I think it's a phenomenal fit, and Todd's certainly the guy to take over the reins on that one. And again, my thanks to Todd for taking the time to join Anthony on our Red Brand Radio show yesterday, which you can catch every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday here on the network from 3 to 6 Eastern Time. Going to get to another break. When I come back, the Hall of Famer, Chris McCarron, is in studio with me. He's sitting right next to me. You're going to hear from him next on the Equine Forum on HRRN, presented by Red Brand Fence, manufacturing the V-Mesh and non-climb fence you see on horse farms worldwide.
Gio Ponti, a 3-time Eclipse Award winner.
Gio Ponti adds the million to his grade one collection.
Champion older male.
The champion, Gio Ponti, to take the Shadwell Turf Mile for Ramon Dominguez.
And 2-time champion male turf horse with career earnings over $6 million.
Final 16th of the Shadwell Turf Mile, Gio Ponti, Wise Dan, charging after Get Stormy. Gio Ponti from the outside. How about that? Gio Ponti will go back to the winner's circle.
In 2019, Gio Ponti is the sire of 10 stakes horses and 7 stakes winners from 5.5 furlongs to 12 furlongs, including Grade 2 winner America's Tale, Grade 3 winner Gucci Factor, and stakes winners Long Runner, Dubini, Giovanna Blues, and Olympic Runner. In addition, Gio Ponti has produced champion sprinter and Grade 1 Breeders' Cup sprint winner Dre Fong and $1 million Queen's Plate winner Sir Dudley Diggs. Gio Ponti, standing at Castleton Lions.
Woodford Feed, where tradition merges with technology. Family-owned since 1940 and providing exceptional customer service, Woodford Feed specializes in the highest quality feed, using only the finest ingredients to ensure optimal nutrition for your horses. In addition, Woodford Feed can help with all your farm needs, including field seed, fertilizer, and weed control. So whether your horse is sprinting around the racetrack or has a foal by her side, count on Woodford Feed to provide the quality nutrition necessary to perform at the highest level. Woodford Feed, Versailles, Kentucky.
The Florida thoroughbred industry is celebrating 75 years with the Florida Thoroughbred Breeders and Owners Association. And what a successful 75 it has been. Florida breds have won 19 Triple Crown races, 52 national championships, and along the way, making 170 racehorse millionaires, plus 66 Eclipse Awards, with 2 Florida breds, Imperial Hint and World of Trouble, receiving Eclipse Award nominations in 2020. The FDBOA, celebrating 75 years. Join Florida for the next 25.
Fans, join us on Saturday for one of the biggest days of the year, Santa Anita Handicap Day. Come early. First post time for a 12-race card is at 11:30 a.m. In addition to the 83rd running of the Big Cap, we'll have one of America's most important derby preps, the Grade 2 $400,000 San Felipe, along with the Grade 1 Frankie Kilroy Mile, the Grade 2 San Carlo Stakes, and the China Doll for three-year-old fillies at a mile on turf. Again, first post time on Big Cap Day is at 11:30, Santa Anita. Great racing and great value in a world-class setting.
Adina Springs bred, raced, and developed Awesome Again and Ghost Sapper into important stallions. Now comes Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, bred, raced, and backed by the strength of Adina. A Hall of Fame runner like his sire and grandsire, Shaman Ghost captured the classic Queen's Plate at 3 en route to his Sovereign Award championship. At ages 4 and 5, Shaman Ghost made cross-country history as the only horse in the past 30 years to capture both the Woodward Stakes and Santa Anita Handicap.
Shaman Ghost! He has won the Woodward!
It's Shaman Ghost, an overwhelming force in the last 16th of a mile.
Shaman Ghost would go on to earn over $3.8 million with repeated success at the highest level. Additional graded wins include the Grade 2 Brooklyn Invitational, the Marine Stakes, and Pimlico Special, before defeating the likes of Keen Ice and California Chrome, went second to Arrogate in the inaugural $16 million Pegasus World Cup. Ghost Sapper's best son, Shaman Ghost, standing at Adina Springs, Kentucky. Look for his fantastic first yearlings at the sales in 2020.
Hi, this is jockey Rajiv Maharaj, and I love listening to my friends on the Horse Racing Radio Network.
You're listening to the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, presented by Red Brand Fence.
They come for home. Ali Sheba, Ferdinand on the outside. Judge Angelucci, Super Diamond at the eighth pole. Ferdinand and Ali Sheba. What a race this is. Just what the fans wanted. Ferdinand and Ali Sheba. Ali Sheba's holding on at the rail. Ali Sheba and Chris McCarron win the Big Cap.
Welcome back to the Equine Forum, presented by Red Brand Fence on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Mike Penna, Baron of the Backstretch, in our Lexington, Kentucky studios. That call, a little trip down memory lane, a very young Trevor Denman with the 1988 Big Cap, Ali Sheba holding off Ferdinand under Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron. It was the first of three victories in the Big Cap for Chris, who is with me now in our Lexington studios. Chris, that little trip down memory lane. First of all, thank you for coming in here today, but that little trip down memory lane for you, I just had to play that. I mean, that race, Ali Sheba, so gutsy, just all heart.
Oh, he sure was. He was really on his game at that point in his career. And he early in his career, he would play around and scoof around on the track, you know, and not win by very much. He'd always just get there, and you think he's all out, but he always had something left in the tank. And he could not have been better than he was on the day of the Big Cap.
I watched that replay a couple of times, and Ferdinand was kind of right off your flank to your outside, turning for home. When you think back on that moment, did you know he was right there and that you were in for a little bit of a fight through the lane?
I knew he was on my hip at the 5/8 pole.
Yeah, really?
Yeah, we turned down the backside, and I was laying third, and Shu was laying fourth on Ferdinand towards the outside. And if you get a chance to watch the replay, you'll see Shoes asking Ferdinand to go ahead and go after Ali Sheba kind of early. He started asking him around the 5.5 down the backstretch. And as we went along, he just kept pressure on us. And Shu tried to turn it into a match race, which he pretty much did. And good taste also, he didn't give up. He came back on again towards the end a little bit. It was funny though. Ferdinand didn't like to win by very far, and neither did Ali Sheba. So there was like, okay, which one wants to win the most, you know? And I think on the day, Ali Sheba probably had the more heart.
Yeah, it's a special day at Santa Anita today. Again, Big Cap Day. We're remembering the Big Cap with Hall of Fame jockey Chris McCarron here in studio. You also have the San Felipe. Chris has won that race more than any jockey in history 7 times. We'll talk to him about that here in a minute. But your other Big Cap wins. You go from Ali Sheba, you come back with Free House in 1999, and then Tisnow in 2001. What do you remember about those days?
Oh, Free House ran a very, very game race as well. He didn't win by very far. He only won by about a neck, I think. Tisnow, he won fairly comfortably. And how blessed was I to be able to ride horses like that, huh?
How special is that race, the Big Cap? I mean, you participated in it. You won it. What's it mean to racing in California?
That race was huge in my mind. Ever since the first time I rode in the race was 1978. I moved my tack from Maryland to Southern California in March of 1978. It was actually March 27th. And the reason I know that date, it's my birthday. So happy birthday to me coming up.
I was going to say, happy early birthday.
Yeah, right. But, we Vigors won that day, and it was Darrell McCarg's sixth winner on the card that day. He was leading rider at the time, and Vigors came from way, way back. He was 20 lengths out of it with 3/8 of a mile left to go. And to watch that white tornado come flying down the middle of the racetrack, Dave Johnson called, and here comes the white tornado of Vigors on the outside. And it was so exciting. So ever since that day, that race has meant a lot to me.
When you're on
Though I didn't win it that year, there was so much hype about it. It was so hyped up and everything. And I went from the smaller tracks in Maryland to the big time. And so that race holds a special place in my heart.
When you're on a horse and that horse levels out and he's giving you everything he has, what's that put into words for people that have never done that before? What's that feeling like?
Exhilaration. Exhilaration comes from acceleration, if you will. I'm a poet now, right? but when you're going along in a big race like that, everything's on the line. Sometimes the horse of the year is on the line. There's so much competition in those big grade ones like that. They're all good horses that run in the races, all good trainers, owners, jocks. So it's always very prestigious to be able to participate in races like that. And the Big Cap is certainly way up on my list of races that I always desired to win. And now I'm proud to say that I got three of them. So,
well, you got three of those. You got seven San Felipe victories. And when I called you yesterday to ask you to join me here on the program, I said, okay, I'm going to give you a little trivia. I said, your first one was in 1982. What was the name of the horse? And it took you all of about 10 seconds to come up with the name of the horse. You got the owner first.
That's right. I remember riding in Mr. Hooper's colors, the blue colors with red sleeves and a white circle H on the back for Fred Hooper. He was one of the best owners in the country, best breeders for many, many years. And back in the early 80s, he had a group of three-year-olds in his barn that were really nice horses. And Advance Man was the one who won the San Felipe that day. He also had a horse called Journey at Sea around that time, and Precisionist was one of the, he was in my, I'd say in my top five horses I've ever ridden. So that was fun times back then. But I'm ashamed to say, a little embarrassed to say, I need a hint to tell me so I can tell you the last one I won on in the San Felipe.
The most recent,
1998.
1998. You don't remember the name of the horse? 1998. Let's see. I'll give you the owner. Paranex Stable.
Oh, Artax.
There you go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Artax. Yep. I rode him in the Kentucky Derby as well.
Yep.
For Randy Bradshaw.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because the horse that won the San Felipe the year before, Freehouse, we talked about you riding Freehouse to win the Big Cap. You didn't ride him in the San Felipe the year before. That was David Flores.
David Flores rode him, and Kent DeSorma rode him in the Triple Crown races. David rode him early on at Santa Anita as a three-year-old. I think Eddie might have even ridden him once or twice, too.
Yeah.
But he was a quirky horse. He was a horse that didn't like to be hit, and you had to be careful. He would run from the stick, but not every time that you hit him would he run from the stick. You might tap him, and he'd go ahead and move forward. You feel the acceleration, and then if he felt an undue amount of pressure on him, he would kind of pin his ears and sulk a little bit. But he was a very talented racehorse, though.
After your first win with Advance Man in 1982, you come back and you take the San Felipe again the following year with a horse by the name of Desert Wine, and he was a pretty good racehorse.
He sure was. Yeah. Yeah, he won the Hollywood Gold Cup as a four-year-old. Unfortunately, I wasn't on his back that day. Eddie Delahousie rode him in that race, but I was I rode him in the San Felipe. I rode him in the Kentucky Derby. He was second. Rode him in the Preakness. He was second there. And if I remember correctly, I think he finished third or fourth in the Belmont. But sometimes my brain works really, really clear, and other times it's a little bit fuzzy.
Well, you remember the wins easier than you remember the seconds, though, don't you?
This is true, yeah.
How about, let me see, who's your third one? 1986, Variety Road.
Oh, yeah, for Bruce Headley.
Bruce Headley, yeah.
Yeah, and Shel Cavalli, the guy who owned Golden Gate Fields for a long time. Variety Road, he was a very nice horse, and as a four-year-old, or maybe, what year did you say that was, 86?
That was 86, yeah.
Yeah, okay, 86, so,
yep.
Yeah, on October 15th of 1986, I was on Variety Road in an allowance race at Santa Anita, and I was the fourth rider to fall in a five-horse spill.
Ooh.
And Lafitte was the fifth rider to fall, and he came hurtling through the air as I was rolling on the ground, and he landed on my left leg and broke it in four places. And I missed the Breeders' Cup that year, but I had a great opportunity. NBC hired me to do the color commentary with Dick Enberg.
That's great.
On all the races on Breeders' Cup Day. That was 2 weeks after I got hurt. So that was a great opportunity.
Yeah, how great was that to work with Dick Enberg?
Unbelievable.
Yeah.
What a perfectionist
that
man was.
What I wouldn't give to be able to do something like that.
Oh, he was awesome.
Yeah.
To be able to rub elbows with him during the telecast was something I'll never forget.
Yeah. Is it hard for a jockey to sit there on the sidelines and, you know, you want to compete so bad? Is that difficult, even though you're doing something like that with Enberg?
You don't even have to ask a long question. Yeah, it hurts. Yeah, you get very jealous, and you get, you know, I know jealousy is not a very good quality to have, but you certainly regret any kind of time that you have to take off when the big races are on the line. Obviously, you'd much prefer to be out there, but I had a good second option for a job doing the telecast for NBC.
Yeah, you certainly did. Seven horses entered into this afternoon's San Felipe. Authentic for Bob Baffert. Bob's won the race a record six times. He'll look to make it seven later today. But Authentic, one of two horses entered for him. This is a horse that you were very impressed with last time.
I certainly was.
Yeah.
This is a horse that was in front all the way. When Drayden asked him to run turn for home, he opened up seven lengths, and then he started to duck around, and he looked like he was trying to prop, which means halt abruptly. He swerved in, almost hit the fence a couple different times, and he still, despite all of those antics, he still won comfortably. He went by 7.5 lengths, and he looked like a really good horse to me on that day. You don't like to see a horse misbehave like that, but that's an indication that he won with a lot left in the tank.
Yeah, if you are going to misbehave, you better win and win going away. And if you can do it that way, you know, all the better.
Right.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Hall of Famer Chris McCarron in studio with me here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Again, a seven-time winner of the San Felipe, a three-time winner of the Big Cap. Chris, you talked about your memories of the Big Cap and what it meant to you and to racing in California. This day in particular, especially considering everything that Santa Anita has been through over the course of the past couple of years, this day, a day to celebrate everything that's good about the sport.
Oh, without question. I wish I was there.
Yeah.
I love these big days. There'll be a good crowd out there today. It's supposed to have some really nice weather, which they usually do. This is a very big day that all the jocks, trainers, and owners and the fans get really hyped up about.
Who are some of the best young riders in California today?
Well, Drayden's a very good rider.
Yeah.
He rides Authentic this afternoon. He certainly is a very good rider. They've got a decent colony out there right now.
Yeah, they do.
I'm not exactly sure who I would put on the top. The guy that always amazes,
like Talamo and Bejarano and those guys that are always at the top of the list.
Yeah, well, Talamo is he's like third leading rider at Oaklawn Park right now.
Yep.
He moved his tack to Oaklawn, then he's coming here to Kentucky. And so is Bejarano.
Yeah.
I read that in the paper last night this morning.
It'd be good to see him back in the bluegrass.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of money here, and the draw, the lifestyle, living here, living conditions is great. I love it. I've been here for 15 years now, and so I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Yeah, nobody better than Chris McCarron. I told you before, I had two favorite jockeys growing up before I started getting into horse, or just as I started getting into horse racing. I had Chris McCarron, and I had Mike Smith. You guys were my two favorites.
Well,
so,
thank you very much.
To be able to sit here with you in studio is pretty cool.
I'm in pretty good company with Money Mike there.
Yeah, you are. He was in Saudi Arabia along with you, right?
Oh,
you weren't
man,
competing.
They hammered him.
Yeah.
I can't believe the fine and the suspension they gave him.
I know.
That was ludicrous.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Ridiculous.
Oh, my God. $261,000 fine and then 8 days of suspension and stuff. I should know this, but I don't. I'm going to ask you the question. Were they calendar days that he received or racing days?
That's a great question. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But
that's very important because if it's racing days and they're specific to the dates that they run in Riyadh, then Mike would have to serve on those particular days.
Right, right.
So you're going out a couple of months.
Yep. Yep, that's true. That's true.
But
I
if
don't
they're
know.
Calendar days, then the 8 days will go by, you know, quickly enough.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, listen, we got to get to a final commercial break, but as always, love having you on board. It's always fun to catch up and visit with you, and thanks for coming in to share a little time with me this morning.
Thank you so much, Mike. I always enjoy your company.
And Chris McCarron, like all of our guests who appear on the program, will receive a gift courtesy of Embrace the Race, the apparel for the horse racing lifestyle. Wear what you love and embrace your passion at EmbraceTheRace.com. I'll be back to tell you what's ahead on the Horse Racing Radio Network and wrap this one up right after this on the Equine Forum on the Horse Racing Radio Network, your home for the Kentucky Derby and Triple Crown.
Spendthrift Farm is at it again, now offering breeders our best incentives yet, including deep discounts on young stallions and proven stallions. And for the first time, 30 days paid boarding at the farm of your choice so that you can breed your mare to a stallion from the most diverse roster in North America without the burden of boarding costs. Serious deals on serious stallions, only at Spendthrift, the Breeders' Farm. Call today to learn more, 859-294-0030, or visit SpendthriftFarm.com.
Shadwell Farm, home to world-class stallions, presents two young stars. Mohamed, undefeated two-year-old, multiple graded stakes winner at 2 and 3, a dazzling son of Tappan, winner of his first 5 career starts, 4 in graded stakes. Grade 1 winner, Tamer Coos, winner of the Breeders' Cup Dirt Mile. This son of Spitestown was a top international miler that earned over $1.8 million. Shadwell Farm, building speed for the future.
Racing at Gulfstream.
Catch year-round world-class horse racing whenever you'd like from North America's premier thoroughbred horse racing destination, Gulfstream Park. With the championship meet in full swing, join us Saturday, March 28th for the Grade 1 Florida Derby as the top 3-year-old thoroughbreds compete for their chance to be legends. Feel the heart-pounding action up close with viewing from the rail or enjoy within the comfort of our trackside restaurants. Visit GulfstreamPark.com for more information. Gulfstream Park, thrills at every turn.
When it comes to buying tractors, mowers, and farm equipment, look no further than locally owned Central Equipment on Red Mile Road in Lexington. A third-generation family business, Central Equipment has been servicing the equine industry for more than 46 years, working closely with the NTRA to ensure their equine clients get the best pricing on their new John Deere purchases. At Central Equipment, you'll find top brands like Exmark, Kubota, Still, John Deere, and Woods. Stop in today and experience the family-owned atmosphere or visit centralequipment.com.
Power.
Cara Conti has won.
Passion.
It's Cara Conti winning by about a neck or so.
Performance.
Cara Conti at a door. Cara Conti.
Gainsway stallion Cara Conti. A precocious Group 1 winner as a 2-year-old and a 3-time Grade 1 winner, including a scintillating win in the Breeders' Cup Mile in 1:32 and 4 fifths, recording a 1:14 buyer speed figure. Cara Conti possesses a strong Stormcat male line and hails from a top female family, which includes the hugely influential champion Miesque as his third dam. The only second crop sire with graded stakes winners on dirt and turf, Cara Conti's first crop of 3-year-olds includes Sol Volante, winner of the Grade 3 Sam F. Davis Stakes, and undefeated colt Kenzai Warrior, who is pointed to the Group 1 English 2000 Guineas. Value priced at just $10,000, Cara Conti gets the gold according to Chris McGrath's Value Podium in the TDN. He has the performance, the pedigree, and the physical. Come see Cara Conti at Gainesway.
This is Chris Landeros. You're listening to the Horse Racing Radio Network.
Well, don't forget that inside the March 7th issue of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet, you can read about Maximum Security Score in the inaugural Saudi Cup. You can read about the Blood Horse Market Watch and the focuses on freshman sires and juvenile auctions and so much more. Download a copy of Blood Horse Magazine and Tablet today from the App Store or Google Play or shop.bloodhorse.com, or you can sign up at subscribe.com. www.bloodhorse.com. Thanks to everybody who took time to weigh in on the poll question. Don't have time to read through all the answers, or at least the comments. Where did your love of horse racing begin? Hashtag for love of the game. You can go to @HRN on Twitter to read all those responses. Really appreciate everybody doing that. My thanks to all of our guests for making this show possible, including Jared Burdine from Hillendale, Safi Joseph Jr., Gary Contessa, Todd Pletcher, Chris McCarron, and our industry star of the week, Susan Ditter. Don't forget, we're back Wednesday with Red Brand Radio, 3 to 6 Eastern Time. Make sure you're locked in to that program, and visit horseracingradio.net for a podcast of this program and all of our shows. They're there for you, horseracingradio.net. Now for my producer, Lee Delapina, in our Lexington studios, for Chauncey with our social media, I'm Mike Penna. Thanks for listening. Go Steelers!